Ladies and gentlemen, you have once again tuned in to Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast and Pain Train Pipe Bomb Productions. You all know who I am, so there's no need for me to introduce myself, but I will take the time to introduce Brooklyn's finest and a constant guest on this show. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Mark freaking Braverman. Mark, welcome back. It has been too long.
It's been far too long, Alex. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's always in damn allergies. It's always an honor. Yes, it does. It's always an honor to come onto the show with you. Unfortunately, though, it's one of those times where we have to do a sad topic, and I hate when we got to do these kind of things. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. And the sad part is, I mean, this was in consecutive days. Now, everybody knows the previous episode I did on the one and only Terry Funk. But the next day, Wyndham Rotunda, a.k.a. Bray Wyatt, a.k.a. The Fiend. Dude, I was bawling, man. My eyes out. 36 years old. He was too damn young, man.
Actually, I think he was 36 or 38, one or the other.
He was 36 years old. He was 36 years old.
And, you know, what even hurts even more is that he's a father. I mean, he's got two children.
He's actually got a total of four, yeah, from a previous relationship, yeah. He's a father of four, I know. But you know what the biggest twist of the whole situation, Mark? Because the day Bray Wyatt died, guess whose birthday it was? Vince McMahon.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to get to that because I've got something to say about it because how many times have you, me, and our buddy Ricky, who I really wanted to get on this show, but unfortunately he was unavailable today. How many times have all three of us discussed and how frustrated we were because of how misused and poorly booked Bray Wyatt had been over the years?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all of us have discussed that not only in private but on the show that Bray Wyatt has been misused. And I'm going to go on record this. I was really not a major fan of the guy. But I did respect his work.
Now we know why you weren't a fan, because they did not book him properly.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who had phenomenal mic skills. We're talking about a guy who not only beat John Cena, but beat John Cena in a cage. His organization, the Wyatt family, beat The Shield.
Twice,
correct. He helped Alexa Bliss's career when it was stuck. When Alexa Bliss's career was stuck, she had nothing better to do.
Mm-hmm.
He made how many stars did he make out of the Wyatt family?
I mean, he's reunited with his brother up in heaven, Mr. Brody Lee. And you know something? When I did that episode to paying tribute to Brody Lee on the anniversary of his death, I mean, you saw this episode, I mean, because you called me directly, because in that episode, I sounded emotional and frustrated because,
yeah,
much like Bray Wyatt, Brody Lee, or as Luke Harper, as he was known in WWE, had they only just made things correctly, they would have made megastars out of the guys, money would have been made, careers would have been solidified, a lot of things would have been done, but Vince just could not, I mean, I don't know if I should say could not do it, or just simply did not want to. Now, I understand Vince can't and won't please everybody, but with Bray Wyatt, seriously, as you mentioned, great mic skills, unique and tremendous wrestling ability, great charisma, everything he needed, Vince just did not want to do it.
I mean, you talk about a guy who was, what, 320, 325, and can do a full bridge and actually walk backwards in the spider position, or the bridge position, as I call it. That's just freaky.
I mean, Bray Wyatt did a lot of things, but we knew him before he was Bray Wyatt. I mean, we knew him in 2010 and 2011 when he was part of the Nexus. Back then, he was known as Husky Harris.
I mean, you talk about a guy who can bridge and walk backwards on his hands. That's nuts.
It is. But as I just mentioned, we remember his days, you know, with the Nexus back in 2010. I mean, when he was NXT as well. I mean, he was at NXT before it was NXT. It was still Florida Championship Wrestling. I mean, the dude was around forever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He had an amazing career path into a very short time.
He did.
And that's the tragedy of this, is that I can only imagine what would have happened if his career would have been what we were all hoping for, a very long championship career, main eventer. I can only imagine. And to get back to your point about Vince, the problem here is that I don't know if Vince was convinced that he was ready to maybe take the Undertaker spot, which was always a possibility for him, or if maybe Vince thought that he just wasn't ready for the main event, which you and I completely disagree with. And I think a lot of wrestling fans out there do too. But look at the list of opponents that the man has beaten. Now, you and I are not in the WWE locker room, unfortunately. I haven't had a friend in the locker room for a very long time. But I don't get into Vince's head. I don't even attempt to do that.
It's impossible. The U.S. government tried to. It didn't work. Everybody that tried to fight Vince in the 90s, whatever, they all tried it. You just cannot beat Vincent K. McMahon.
Except if you're Shawn Michaels.
WrestleMania 22. And, of course, if you're Jesse the Body Ventura.
Except if you're Shawn, or except if you're Triple H, which is a whole different ballgame. Well, in the locker room, a lot of things that they wanted to do that Vince said no, eventually they had done. And I think that Bray Wyatt was also one of those who Vince might have said, all right, we're not going to do this. And Bray did it anyway because he knew it would make him money, make him famous, which he absolutely did.
I mean,
think about the impact that this man has had. Jericho's overseas right now with his band Fozzy. I think it was before, in the middle of the concert, he stopped in to announce that Bray Wyatt has died.
Yeah, he paid tribute to Bray, yeah.
The entire arena starts singing. He has the whole world in his hands. We go to SmackDown on Friday last night. The entire crowd starts singing. He's got the whole world in his hands. All what they call fireflies or the flashlights on your phones went up. This man had an impact that very few people have ever had on this business.
Mm-hmm.
Very few get to where he was.
Very few. And that says a lot.
And for Vince to shut down his career so early, because I guess maybe he thought that the guy was a little bit out of shape, or maybe he had an argument with him backstage, I don't know. But I do know this. The man had a wonderful, wonderful impact. And I dare say, and as much as I'm to like Mike Rotunda, IRS, I think Bray Wyatt did more in his career than IRS ever did.
Well, you know, you might say IRS could have done more, but yeah, you know, yeah, a lot of people don't know. Yeah, Bray Wyatt is the son of Michael Rotunda, who, of course, we know is Irwin R. Seister, otherwise known as IRS. And, of course, he's the older brother of Bo Dallas,
whose career also was completely killed, unfortunately. And I always did like Bo Dallas. I always thought that he was an amazing wrestler. And look at his family tree. You're talking about Blackjack Mulligan, two-time World Tag Team Champion, the famous Blackjacks. His uncle was a heavyweight champion and a member of the Four Horsemen, Barry Windham. So wrestling was very deep in this guy's blood, and this guy's family tree. You knew he was going to become a pro wrestler.
Damn right, man. Damn right. And
you look at,
you know, much like you right now, I'm trying to fight back with tears, you man.
I mean, look at the guy's family.
Yeah. Look at it. Wrestling is his life. That's why he decided, you know, I'm gonna become a wrestler.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look at Philly Street. You're talking about a member of the Four Horsemen, the most elite group in the history of wrestling. The Blackjacks, one of the most dangerous tag teams of all time in pro wrestling. His father was a member of the Million Dollar Corporation, 2- or 3-time world tag team champion. Bray Wyatt, 2-time heavyweight champion. So you're talking about a family tree that has seen more titles than a lot of families. So it's amazing that the man that he had such a wonderful career.
Yeah.
And I think people look back on it, they'll go, wow. The Firefly match, which was incredible. That, what is it? The The Firefly match, I think they had something like that, which was an incredible match. Beat John Cena in a cage match. Twice, he beat the Shield in a tag match. And my favorite moment with Bray Wyatt involves The Undertaker.
In 2015.
It was on Monday Night Raw. Taker's about to choke slam somebody. He throws him to Bray Wyatt. Wyatt hits Sister Abigail. I don't know what the hell Undertaker whispered to Bray Wyatt's ear, but all I know is Bray Wyatt had this look on his face like, that was the most incredible thing of my life, and Taker walks out of the ring. The man on the locker room for 30 years gave him that spotlight.
Yeah, 100%. And, of course, you know, when the Wyatts first appeared on WWE regular programming, I mean, the first major feud, I mean, again, you had the Shield and everything, and then that feud with John Cena, WrestleMania 30, which the match I felt was, the match was, you might hate me for saying this, I don't think the match itself was bad. The match was good. Everybody always argues that Bray should have won. It's an argument, okay, I don't know if I want to say that John Cena beating Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30 was bad, because the match itself was good, so Bray did have positive moments in the match. He didn't win, but you know, the bottom line is, again, you know, it's just the poor booking over the years, because I've got these notes right here, which we'll get to, but, you know, everything you mentioned, because, you know, we mentioned the beginning of the Wyatt family, and then when he did the thing where he set both Eric Rowan and Luke Harper, he set them free. I'll never forget that. That was in the fall of 2014. Mm-hmm. Then he became the new face of Fear and had that feud with The Undertaker.
That was the best feud of the year.
It was, and then, of course, the Wyatt family returned. I'll never forget that moment with The Rock at WrestleMania 32.
Sixth match.
Yeah, but, you know, and you know that feud with Dean Ambrose, who, of course, we know is Jon Moxley, was pretty good. But, you know, you mentioned Ambrose, and another guy that was poorly booked over the years. So when they finally put the belt on Bray, which was in 2017, now, before that point, they put him in the picture several times, but when he won I mean, Randy Orton, part of the Wyatt family, something that I never fully understood, because I never just thought as Randy Orton as a guy that could fit in the Wyatt family. But
I don't think he would have fit either. But there was a question about Bryan Danielson being in the Wyatt family.
Yeah, that was briefly. Yeah, it was. That was like in like I think that ended around the Royal Rumble of 2014 as well. But
I don't know if Danielson needed to be there either. But he's trying to build up his brand, and he built a hell of a team. He really did.
He did, and when he won the title, when he won it at the Elimination Chamber, and then only to lose it to Randy Orton at WrestleMania 33. To me, it's not only bad for Bray, but I would imagine this had to affect Orton too. But at the end of the day, if Randy Orton simply, if he was doing what Vince told him to, then you can't hate on Randy. I mean, Randy was only doing his job. So, but
yeah,
and we mentioned some of the accomplishments right there as well. You know, like from the Wrestling Observer, 2017. You know, the worst feud of the year was with Randy Orton. I mean, four times he was involved in the worst feud of the year. In 2017 against Randy Orton, 2019 versus Seth Rollins, 2020 with Braun Strowman, and finally 2021 with Alexa Bliss and Randy Orton again.
You know, the funny thing is that the wrestlers don't have a choice who they feud with. That's completely up to Vince. And it's not like back in the day where they went into the ring and they used to go, well, I'm going to kick your butt and I hate this guy and what have you. The problem is now everything is scripted. That's the problem.
And The Fiend was, check this out, The Fiend was voted the worst gimmick in 2020.
Absolutely, it was a horrible gimmick for him.
Because of the booking. It could have you remember 2019, the feud with The Fiend versus Seth Rollins? When I talk about both guys being affected, both of them were affected. Seth Rollins and The Fiend were affected by it. You remember the Hell in a Cell match?
One of the worst.
Ricky, our friend Ricky, he told me a story about this, how you called him, that you were so legitimately pissed off about it that you felt that you had to talk to Ricky just to calm yourself down. You see, folks, some people say, why be so upset? It's just wrestling. Like, look, when you love pro wrestling the way we do, and when you speak to educated fans like us, okay, and when we see something that we know is stupid and it affects not only the talent, but the art and the company itself, you're damn right we're going to be upset about it. I mean, Seth Rollins even admitted that he was so mad he wanted to confront Vince, and I'm not going to, I mean, he did say what he wanted to do, but I'm not going to say it on here because it's, well, we know, but Seth Rollins was extremely mad because that Hell in a Cell match, the finish was just so piss poor. I mean, it ended on referee stoppage. A Hell in a Cell match that ends like this? What the hell was that?
I've seen every Hell in a Cell match ever made.
I know you have.
He's
not kidding, y'all. Mark has. And not only have you seen every Hell in a Cell match, you've seen them at least once. At least 10 times, honestly.
Okay, I've seen them all.
Yeah.
I've seen the best of them and the worst of them.
Yeah.
I love your shirt, by the way. I love it.
Thank you.
So
that's what I am. I'm a heel, y'all.
Yes. I was looking forward to Wyatt on one side and Seth Rollins on the other. Two incredibly talented wrestlers on the pay-per-view. I couldn't wait. Then we got to the match. And I'm watching the match. And I'm thinking, what the hell are we doing, guys? You're acting like this is a throwaway. See, I've never heard of a referee stopping a cage match. Never.
Well, Hell in a Cell, but...
No, never. Never, ever. I mean, we're talking about Mankind going over the top of... off the top of the cell, but Undertaker, they didn't stop that one. Batista, Triple H killing each other, didn't stop that one. The Triple H Mankind, the fire incident, didn't stop that one.
Chris Jericho versus Triple H in 2002.
Didn't stop that one, and that one was really bloody.
What about the one in 2004, HBK versus Triple H at Bad Blood?
Amazing match. Didn't stop it. But you stopped this one? I mean, I was just furious. I was so mad. I wanted to call Vince and tell him off. I don't have Vince's phone number, obviously, but I mean...
And mind you, everybody, this was before Mark and I knew each other. This is in 2019, but before the world went to complete shit.
Correct.
Which I really don't want to get to because it's just frustrating. And it's frustrating enough. Cost me problems.
And I was home, actually. I wasn't even at Matt's house for this one. I was home. The match ended. I called Ricky, and I had to go to work the next day when I was still working. And I said, Rick, what the hell was that? Rick goes, you think you're mad? I'm going to put my fist through the wall.
I mean, like I said, Ricky told me the story. I would imagine your wife would confirm the story as well.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Let me ask you this. Was she upset too?
She didn't watch the match. I mean, she's not as much into wrestling as we are.
Yeah.
So she really didn't watch the match. But she understood. But then she said, what's wrong? And I told the story. She goes, that doesn't make any sense. I went, I know. You're preaching to the choir. So.
I mean, because eventually the Fiend won the title. They did it. What was it? A False Count Anywhere match. It was at the Super Show in Saudi Arabia. But still,
yes.
I think honestly, putting the Fiend and Rollins in together because both guys were on fire. First of all, I think Seth Rollins dropping the belt twice in 2019, first to Brock Lesnar and then to the Fiend. I think that was a complete derailing moment.
Yes.
The Fiend and Rollins were both great, but I just don't think placing them in the rivalry was the right thing to do. It could have been done eventually, but I think it was just thrust in too early. If Rollins had lost the belt as a babyface to the Fiend at the right time, I think things would have been fine. But I just think the timing was done horrible.
I agree.
And I'll be honest, as we get to the part of the Fiend, I mean, the Fiend itself, changing the Bray Wyatt character to the Fiend, I thought that was like, okay, if they're trying something new and if they're serious about it, then fine, I'll go with it. Because you see The Fiend, and then you have Bray Wyatt have the that thing he had, like the Mr. Rogers kind of thing with the puppets, the fire, what is it called, the Firefly Funhouse or whatever it's called.
I hated that.
Yeah, like the children's TV show kind of thing. So you see an alter ego between this and then The Fiend. So I was like, okay, this is actually a little bit of multiple personality disorder, you know, kind of thing. So I kind of get it. Bray Wyatt has this one particular, how do you say, like this alter ego and the other. It's kind of like Mick Foley and Cactus Jack, Mankind, Dude Love It. It was something you could probably say it kind of reminded us of that, but you know, I think that the pandemic ruins a lot of stuff. I mean, I don't want to get into that because I'm just every time somebody asks me what are my thoughts on the whole situation, I'm like, I'm not going to talk about it because it was pathetic. Because it ruined so many lives. It caused everybody enough problems, and a lot of us are still recovering from it. But
yep,
I can't tell you just how badly wrestling was affected. But going back to The Fiend, at first, I mean, again, when they first started it, it was the Firefly Funhouse. I was like, let's at least give it a shot. But eventually, I don't know.
To be honest,
I'm trying not to get angry right now because, again, everything Bray Wyatt had to offer, WWE just could not. They just did not give him the damn ball and let him run with it.
No, they didn't. And let's go back to the Funhouse thing for a second. That's when Alexa Bliss got involved in all this. And everybody knows that I like Alexa Bliss. She's an outstanding wrestler.
And she paid tribute to every wrestler that paid. Every wrestler that talked about it in the aftermath of the death, it was hard to read. I mean, Alexa Bliss's message was hard to read. Oh. Seth Rollins, all of them, man.
I hated this Alexa Bliss character, honestly. And I thought it was going to kill her career. I was wrong, it didn't. But I thought it was going to kill. So she did the right thing. She walked away for a while. Then Bray Wyatt walked away for a while. They both came back stronger than ever. Sometimes when you have a bad storyline, you got to do the right thing, and then they just walk away. And I'm glad that they walked away. So I was not a fan of the Funhouse thing. I was never was. That was, I thought, was, as you said, his weakest character.
I mean, we mentioned the Hell in a Cell match. I mean, I probably forgot to mention the crowd.
They were dead.
Everybody, you thought I was mad. You thought Bravo was mad. You thought our friend Ricky was mad. The crowd that day was mad.
They were dead. The crowd was dead.
They booed. They loudly booed. They just negative chants.
This is BS. We want our money back. I remember. And during the whole match, the crowd was dead also. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I mentioned, you know, everything that happened, you know, after he has the after the Fiend has the Universal title, you know, I think basically, and then in February of 2020, of course Goldberg returns and then challenges the Fiend for the Universal title.
Mm-hmm.
So of course Goldberg wins. I was like, oh, jeez. Well, so then again, yeah, and then he has that match that WrestleMania 36 match with John Cena, but of course it was. Because of what happened, you know, it could take place at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. But, you know, everything just basically, it just got worse and worse and worse. And then we skipped to WrestleMania 37 in Tampa, which I was there. He has that match with Orton. And I was like, yeah, that was the end of it. Because I've spoken about this many times. The Fiend basically dominates the match. Alexa Bliss rises from that Jack in the Box. I'm sure you remember it. She's got that black liquid just pouring out of her. The Fiend's distracted. Orton gets up, one RKO, and it's over. And then the Fiend and Alexa Bliss have a stare down for like 10 seconds, and then they're gone.
Well, you forgot about the match with you forgot about the one he had with the Undertaker, which was a phenomenal match.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about two guys who are masters of mind games. That match was that match was incredible.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the passing of the torch moment, didn't you?
Yeah, sure. But that was on Raw. But their match, I think it was at WrestleMania, was incredible.
Yeah, this was actually at the 30th anniversary of Monday Night Raw.
Hmm?
It was in a segment involving LA Knight. So,
yeah. But their matches were very entertaining when Taker fought Bray Wyatt.
We had to kind of go through a little bit of a time machine of Bray's career, but it's unfortunate that there was, despite all the negatives, Bray Wyatt was still still over with the fans. At least the fans still loved him because they knew that the booking committee that WWE created was just not getting it right. Because we all knew that if they had, let me say it like this. No matter how badly they were booking him, Bray was still trying to make something good out of it, and we saw it. Yeah. That's why that no matter what, the fans never lost their touch with Bray Wyatt. That's why we never stopped believing in him, because he was still trying to make it good.
And I have living proof of this.
Yeah, and he didn't have to tell us, look, I'm trying my best. We knew he was, man. We were with him. Like, we know they're not doing it properly. We know it's not your fault, buddy.
I was at a house show with him here in New York.
What year was that?
Before the pandemic, so.
So 2019, 2018?
2019.
Okay.
The lights go out. And mind you, it's about 3/4 full. It's not a full sellout for some reason.
Well, it's a house show, right?
Every single cell phone goes on. It was like an Undertaker's entrance. It was just that amazing.
It was.
He comes out. The place goes nuts. It's electric. You can feel the badasses coming out. And it's Bray Wyatt. And I was like, he got him. He captured the audience right here in the palm of his hand. And very few men have been able to do it with only one entrance. Shawn, Triple H, Taker, Bray Wyatt are all on the list. And when you can capture Madison Square Garden like that, the most famous, the mecca of arenas, You have accomplished everything you wanted to do in this business.
And you know what's interesting is it wasn't the first time he had done it. It was just a moment. Bray, you did it again, but you only just did it better this time. You outdid yourself this time. The moment that he started on Raw in 2013, he was able to get people with the entrances. But he only did it better each time. He only did it better and better and better and better and better and better.
And when you do it in Madison Square Garden like The Undertaker, like Shawn, like Bret Hart, like Triple H, you have made it to the very top of the WWE.
Massive pop. Massive pop.
Oh, the building was shaking, bro. And he was the heel. And he was the heel. And
the heel
was shaking. They come out, they're all screaming, they got the lights going and everything like that. He's got this big smile on his face, going, I gotcha.
Match,
going back, having that big smile on his face, and Vince must have been like, oh no, the fans picked him. So, I mean, I'm sure Triple H in the back loved it. I'm sure Steph loved it. I'm sure his father loved it. His brother must have loved it. So, I mean, you're talking about the Garden here. The place where the Knicks and the Rangers play. I mean, the mecca of wrestling is Madison Square Garden.
First WrestleMania. I mean, guys, when Vince's father, Vince McMahon Sr., back when wrestling was territorial, back then it was the WWWF, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. It was the territory of the New York, New Jersey area, as well as the surrounding New England area. Madison Square Garden was basically Vince McMahon Sr.'s. It was that particular spot. Madison Square Garden was basically the capital of pro wrestling back then. But yeah, you had territories everywhere. Yeah, of course, down here in Texas, we had the Dallas-Fort Worth territory, which was Fritz Von Erich's World Championship Wrestling. And, of course, Terry Funk's father had that one up in Amarillo where they did shows in West Texas. Of of course, the AWA in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the San Francisco territory. I mean, of course, the Atlantic Coast, which was Jim Cockett Promotions. I mean,
but the Mecca has always been Madison Square
Garden. Madison Square Garden, yeah.
And when you get
it always will be.
When you get to face like the Undertakers, like Bret Hart's, Stone Cold's, when you get that that kind of ovation, you have done yourself.
Big time. And you know what, Mark?
I've done yourself.
Nobody will ever forget it. And I will tell you this: this will be talked about. Everything Bray Wyatt's done, like everything you just said, not only will this be talked about 10 years from now, it's going to be talked about 50 years from now, yes. 100 years from now, yes. 500 years from now, 1,000 years from now. It's going to be talked about for all eternity because Bray Wyatt, again, had us in the palm of his hands the moment he arrived. He kept doing it, and he just got better and better and better.
Yes, sir.
And again, I feel bad that everything we talked about from his career was from negatives because people say, why be so negative? I'm like, well, if we're paying tribute to Bray Wyatt, we're going to point out these moments that WWE got wrong, but I'm expressing my support. WWE, you should have done better. And I'll tell you this. Okay, I'm probably now going to be the biggest schmuck. You remember the program he did with Broken Matt Hardy, who, of course, was Woken Matt Hardy in WWE? You remember the Ultimate Deletion match?
Yeah, I hated the Broken Matt Hardy character, by the way.
Well, you see, that's actually one of the – okay, the one in WWE I did not like, but I'm sure outside WWE it was done better. But I did like the Ultimate Deletion match between Bray Wyatt and Woken Matt Hardy. The end of it made me laugh so hard because how Bray is pushing to the Lake of Reincarnation and is gone. I felt that in storyline that Bray Wyatt was to undergo another massive character change with something completely different. Like, because you know how in the Broken Matt Hardy story, you know what the Lake of Reincarnation is?
I don't remember it, honestly.
it's funny, but it's a little hard to explain. But basically, after that, he kind of became known as the deleter of worlds. But I kind of felt like because he was thrown into the Lake of Reincarnation, and there's this thing like when Matt Hardy did that Stampede match with AEW in 2020 when he was still the broken character. There was a spot in the match where he's dunked into a pool, which is like the same water from that lake. All of a sudden, he pops up as the 1990s Matt Hardy. Of course, the Team Extreme. He gets dunked back into the water. He comes back as the version one. So, and then back in the water, and then another Matt Hardy. So I felt that once Bray Wyatt fell, I thought this was going to be start of a new gimmick. Like, I'll never forget, I teased the idea. Could you imagine if Bray Wyatt came back in a gimmick similar to his dad as an IRS tax collector? And then he announces that Bray Wyatt has been put away for years and years and years of unpaid taxes.
Pay your taxes.
Yeah. Now, I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about it because, you know, right now, honestly, well, speaking of his dad, I mean, when Triple H announced the death of Bray, he said on Twitter, which is now known as X, but you know what? It's always going to be Twitter. But he announced that it was his dad who informed him of his death. So, man,
I found out on Facebook actually.
Yeah, because it started out on Twitter, but then of course it just basically gets spread. I mean, it's spread like wildfire. So of course, eventually it finds its way on Facebook. So.
Well, I was one of the first to know about Terry Funk.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Terry Funk, I did that episode already. I strongly recommend that everybody checks it out. But now I'm thinking, you know, what does this mean for Bray's younger brother, Taylor, who, of course, we knew as Bo Dallas? I mean, we haven't seen the guy in years.
Well, Taylor left the company years ago. You know that by now because they really didn't do anything with him, unfortunately. So I don't know what he's going to do. Does he join AEW? Does he no longer wrestle? Does he come back to a big ovation? Who the hell knows?
I don't know.
Looks like the evil one's creeping behind you again, I think.
Oh, well, he excels at it, but...
Gotcha.
But, you know, at first, the cause of death was not immediately released, but... One particular source said that, you know, WWE gave him permission to actually tell us about it. And The cause of death really caught me by surprise because, well, I should mention, okay, he had been out of action. Bray had been out of action since February of this year after he had concluded a feud with LA Knight. He was actually starting a program with Bobby Lashley, which was to culminate at WrestleMania, but those plans were scrapped because Bray came down with well, at first they said it was an injury, and then it turned out to be an illness, which was considered not only career-threatening, but life-threatening as well.
And, of course, it turned out to be the Worldwide Bastard.
He came down with it, but the particular illness, eventually came out to, like, some sort of heart condition because he died of a heart attack.
Yes, he did.
And what's interesting is it was reported that recently he had been making positive progress towards recovering, and he was on his way back. Like, he was almost going to be cleared to return to wrestling. So,
unfortunately for all of us, it's a very bad ending for him. But
it really is, man.
We'll carry him forever. But I know you mentioned Terry Funk earlier on. Remember this one?
ECW Barely Legal.
This is the original Barely Legal. Now, it's a copy. It's not the original one, obviously, because the original one's out of print. Do you remember the main event of this particular show?
I do not.
It was a three-way dance. Terry Funk was involved in it with the heavyweight champion at the time, Raven. And Stevie Richards, where the winner would go on. Winner would go on to wrestle Raven for the title. There were three guys in it. Terry Funk won the three-way elimination match, and then moments later he goes to wrestle Raven. This was the night that Terry Funk won the ECW title.
I'm sure I talked about it on the show as well, but
the very first Barely Legal pay-per-view. And yeah, I have it.
Yeah. So, according to this, he originally had COVID, but it basically went up to a heart condition, and we all know how it happened. So everybody, like all of his peers, you know, in paying tribute to him. I mean, even at AEW and Impact Wrestling as well, you know, on SmackDown, you know, Eric Rowan would actually appear because Eric Rowan, you know, a huge part of it as well. So, you know, sure. Braun Strowman as well. So basically, I mean, the tribute, the tribute had to have been hard to watch, but
that scene with the chair.
Yeah.
Sat his rocking chair there with the spotlight. That had to be very difficult for everybody in the locker room.
It had to be difficult for everybody that watched, dude.
And to stand at that stage and watch it, knowing that this guy was our friend, must have been nearly impossible. And I like the fact that even the heels were wearing the armbands. If you watch the Damage Control match, all three of them, Terry Funk, Bray Wyatt, all of them were in the armbands. Rey Mysterio had it during his match. LA Knight had it. So Cody Rhodes, I thought, did an amazing tribute to Terry. Then they had everybody's Twitters out about Bray Wyatt. Bailey's, Asuka's, anybody down the line. So it was a wonderful, wonderful tribute. And if you happen to catch my Facebook page this morning, I was very shocked at how many people were very upset about the tribute show. For what? What bothered you? I don't understand this. Two men lost their lives in less than 24 hours of each other. Two of the most talented wrestlers in the world. And I think Triple H, Stephanie, Vince, to their credit, and all the professional wrestlers, to their credit, did exactly what they were supposed to do. They went out there. They had the bell. They had his chair. They had both their pictures up there. Michael Cole opened the show by saying that we lost two amazing wrestlers, which was very true. All the wrestlers were in tears.
Even the tribal chief.
Yeah. So what did you? I mean, these. Yes, they are professional athletes. Yes, they are performers, but they're also human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And they make friends over the years.
Yeah, because they all work together.
You're right. The wrestling world is a very tight-knit group.
They travel together. I mean, yeah. Yep. And they're like family. They're like family.
So it makes me angry when I hear people tell me on Facebook or they text me, I didn't like the tribute show. Well, what didn't you like? You didn't like it that they performed? They're going to perform.
I mean, if you didn't like it, honestly, my advice to you is just keep that to yourself.
Right. And to me, and okay,
now, I shouldn't be talking because I spent a lot of time harshly criticizing WWE Creative for not booking Bray Wyatt properly. So maybe I shouldn't be talking. Maybe I'm just a hypocrite right now, but.
No, you're.
But at the end of the day, I'm expressing my love and support for the guy who passed away.
What we're doing here is fine. But to say the tribute show was terrible, that's wrong. Okay, we both were all negative about what they did to his career. What I'm saying is that there was more than just being a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And to say the tribute show was terrible was wrong. And I understand, yes, okay, the timing was off in all the matches. But what did you expect to happen?
I mean, it happened out of nowhere. It's not like WWE knew it was going to happen.
It was like with the Owen Hart. It's like when Eddie and Owen died. The next day, yes, everybody's timing was off. Because they were generally upset.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this was, oh, okay, well, they're doing a thing where we're wrestling fat. No, this is as real as it comes, ladies and gentlemen. So to say that the tribute show was terrible is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, their timing was off. Okay. Okay, what did you expect? Well, perfect.
Yeah. As our buddy Ricky would say, as far as people saying that it was a bad show, he would probably say, well, in opinions like, you know what, everybody's got one, but.
Wait, what?
But, man, you know, honestly, right now, I mean, the fact that every time when I think that, you know, 2 years ago, we lost Jonathan Huber, who, of course, we know was Brody Lee. Well, of course, he was Luke Harper in WWE. What really, I think, you know, when I did that episode on Brody Lee, I mean, I think the sad and heartbreaking part is it's not so much that WWE could have done better with him. What really hurts me is that Brody Lee, during his time in AEW, never had the chance to perform in front of a live, packed audience. But you know what? He still made an impact. And if there had been an audience there, he would have done great. Because you know what? People were tuning into AEW programming because he was there. He still did. He was still amazing. Because, you know, I think for me, you know, and I mentioned that how ironic it is that Bray Wyatt's death came on Vince's birthday. Because Bray Wyatt, you know, Brody Lee, much like Bray Wyatt, had they just given him the ball and let him run with it, we would have seen amazing results.
Yes, I agree with you.
But you know what? I mean, I get it. Vince can't and will not please everybody, but no. I just don't understand how they just could not, how they were unconvinced with Bray Wyatt.
Two reasons. First of all, every member of the Wyatt family has had an impact on this sport that we call pro wrestling. Every single member. Whether they're in for a long time or they're in for a short time, everyone has had an impact.
Okay.
Everyone has had some sort of title. Not necessarily the heavyweight title, but every one of them has won gold.
Yeah.
Not now. That's what happened for Ryan. It could be that he wasn't as muscular as John Cena. It could be that he wasn't as athletic as some of the other guys in the ring. However, Vince was wrong with that. I'll completely agree with you on that one. Because anytime you can capture the whole world right here, and you're a pro wrestler,
and here,
you, and yeah, in your heart, in your mind, when you're in the ring, Eddie Guerrero wasn't the biggest guy in the world either. Neither's right. Undertaker's not the most athletic guy, not the most athletic guy in the world. Bret Hart wasn't the biggest guy in the world. Ric Flair, not even close. But all of them had the pattern right here.
Mm-hmm.
And in here. Vince blew it with Bray Wyatt. I'll always say that. Because anytime you go to places like Texas, New York, California, England, England, Japan, the bigger countries that do pro wrestling, Canada is on the list. And you can capture the audience like he did. And it was sold out 3/4 halfway, who the hell knows? Anytime you can do that and you have the audience right here, you have done your job.
Let me just say it like this. Bray Wyatt literally had the whole world in his hands.
Yes.
And one more thing, you know, we mentioned Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan, much like Bray, much like Brody, a guy that could have done well. Well, I think Rowan was probably about to get a singles push. You remember, like, before the pandemic started, how he had that push where he was carrying that mysterious cage? You remember that?
Yes.
I think he was probably, at first, I think they were planning to finally give him a push. But, of course, the pandemic happened, and then he loses to Drew McIntyre, and we never see him again. And then that spider, it turned out to be a spider that he was carrying in the cage, which I actually did a specific episode, and as we close it out, I'll make this quick. I did do an episode about Eric Rowan and his pet spider, because I kind of thought, well, obviously, okay, we all knew the spider wasn't real. I mean, it's not something you would find at Party City or any other Halloween store. I'm sure Vince had somebody build it, because, you know, Vince has all the connections, but I did feel that I just didn't feel like a spider. I mean, some people would say, like, if I had a wrestling character that me, I would carry probably a scary creature with me, but I felt like, see, Eric Rowan said in an interview that it was supposed to be a rodent, but they just decided that it was a spider, but the point is, I mean, Rowan was probably, because he was basically squashing various, you know, enhancement talent over the weeks, he was dominant, so I felt sure that he was on his way to getting a push, but, well, it didn't happen. But then again, I mean, all of a sudden, the world just completely shut down. So and then he was released along with numerous other wrestlers. So,
like we said time and time again, sometimes Vince does not know what he has. But first of all, the creature you'd carry would be the evil kitty number one. Let's be honest.
Well, I think for me, it probably just wouldn't be a cat. It would probably be like some sort of demonic mutated cat. Like so it wouldn't just be a normal cat.
Well, we could paint the evil kitty like that. I mean, that's the problem.
I just felt it's just when Rowan pulled out the spider and then everybody got scared and he's like he's like smiling.
Okay, I'll put
it. And then he's like giggling. Then he kind of like he puts it back and he's like careful. He really made it look like I don't know how he did it, but he made it look like it crawled back in. Now clearly he pushed it slowly. Some people thought it was like, okay, first of all, he pulls out a real spider. If it was a real, you really think it was gonna let itself lay on his hand the whole time without biting him at least?
All right, first of all, you're talking to a guy who's absolutely scared of spiders, and I'm scared of snakes.
Me, I have a I suffer from deep arachnophobia.
So, I mean, when he pulled that thing out, I jumped. And I jumped on it, I almost hit the ceiling. And you can ask Tracy, and she'll tell you that I nearly hit the ceiling. And
I believe you.
And, you know, I'll be honest with you. I called Ricky. I said, what the hell was that? He goes, calm down.
It wasn't real. It was a mechanical spider. It wasn't real, but.
Yeah, I know it's mechanical, but still, I'm scared to death of snakes and spiders. So if I see a spider, I jump. Okay. Remember Indiana Jones?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, when all of a sudden. Yeah, I know. That scared the hell out of me.
Remember Harry Potter Part 2?
Yeah. You know what? I'll take even. You remember Jumanji with the late great Robin Williams?
Yeah.
That gave me nightmares. And you know what? That spider scene in Jumanji.
And a pro wrestler gave us.
Now I just briefly lost my mind because of my arachnophobia, because that particular scene made me realize how much I suffer from arachnophobia. So that spider scene in Jumanji.
There you go. But think about it this way. We're too grown.
Sorry, guys. It's just that particular scene, just as a kid, brought up bad memories. So
we were talking about two grown men here, fully adults, talking about how mechanical spider made us jump. When you do that, you've got impact.
It scared me at first, but then after that, I thought it was kind of funny. It's just like I said, when Rowan said in an interview that the original plan, it was not supposed to be a spider, it was supposed to be a rodent or a rat or whatever. I mean, I felt a rat probably would have made more sense.
The rat maybe, but the spider, I think more people are scared of spiders than they are of rats, honestly.
Probably. That's probably why they decided that it was better off to be a spider.
So, people with even if it's a fake spider, if you can hook two people like we are, you know, 45 and your age.
I'm 30.
Well, there you go. And you talk about two fully grown adults who jump when a spider comes out. You've done your job.
No shit.
So
anyway, so my final saying is, rest in peace, Wyndham Rotunda, a.k.a. Bray Wyatt, a.k.a. The Fiend. I express my most sincere and deepest condolences to the man's family and his friends. I am forever grateful for everything that Bray did, not only for in the wrestling business, for the fans, every life that he touched. I'm grateful to his younger brother, Bo. I'm grateful for his father, IRS, even though he was always scolding everybody to pay their taxes. But you know what? It was what it was. I'm grateful for the family. I mean, it has been a difficult. I mean, we lose Terry Funk. We lose Bray Wyatt. And then today we lost Bob Barker. It's not been a pleasant week.
It's been a triangle of a nightmare. I'm going to say this. To Bray Wyatt, as the song goes, my friend, you had the whole world in your hand.
And he's, you know what? He still does, and he always will.
I feel bad for his father, IRS Mike Rotunda, his brother. I feel bad for his grandfather, Blackjack. I feel bad for his uncle, Barry Windham, a member of the Four Horsemen. Bray Wyatt is just one of those wrestlers who will be remembered for the rest of our lives and long after we're gone. Bray, thank you. Thank you for the memories. Thank you for the matches. Thank you for scaring all of us. Thank you for making us love wrestling. And may you rest in peace, sir. As we say in Hebrew, as we say in my religion, may Adonai guide your footsteps.
Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, Ringside Chaos can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and YouTube. Please, please, please be sure you hit the notification bell as well as the subscribe button, because I want to be sure that you will not be missing out on any exciting upcoming content. And one more thing, if you know somebody that loves professional wrestling and they are looking for the greatest pro wrestling podcast in the world, then this is the show for you, for them. So therefore, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to not only subscribe and hit the notification bell, please share this show with your friends and your family and anybody that you know that loves professional wrestling. Mark, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for agreeing to be on this show. I could not have done this episode without you, my friend.
Alex, thank you so much. And you know what the funny thing is? I mentioned this when I did my own personal Facebook blog at 6 o'clock in the morning. I said that I might talk to Alex about doing a show. And here we are.
Well, here we are. Thank you all very much again, ladies and gentlemen. Mark, you have a good night, my friend.
You too. It's been my honor. Thank you so much.
To everyone who loves the taste of tradition, come enjoy a classic Wisconsin fish fry at Culver's.
I'm Genesis from Culver's in Claremont, Florida. And here, family fish fry is a part of who we are. We've been serving up fish fry favorites for over 40 years, all thanks to the Culver Family Roots and Wisconsin Supper Club, the place where the fish fry was perfected. If you're craving something crispy on the outside and flaky on the inside, you've got to try our hand-battered North Atlantic cod. It's perfectly seasoned and my personal favorite. Or if you're in the mood for a little extra crunch, our lightly breaded butterfly jumbo shrimp hits the spot every time. Whatever you order, I promise it will be made with love by a team who cares, because we want every guest to feel like family. That's just how we do it in Wisconsin. Dive into delicious with all your fish fry favorites at Culver's.
From Wisconsin with love, welcome to delicious.